On this Scottish Football Marketing Podcast, we were joined by Nathan Thompson of Berwick Rangers. Nathan took us through some of the exciting changes and initiatives happening at the club. There are lessons for every club in this one, I would say. Before we get into it, I just want to say thank you for all the kind words and feedback Chris and I have received on the podcast. The aim of the podcast has always been to provide tips and advice to Scottish clubs at all levels. It's also been great to hear from people further afield listening too. So thank you for your support and reach out to us on Twitter or LinkedIn at any point. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast with Michael Bocco from the Scottish FA and me, Chris Sampson from Sports Marketing Scotland. Michael, how are we today?
Very good, Chris. Very good, thank you. How's you?
Yeah, not too bad as well. Today's guest is Nathan Thompson, and he is an Associate Director at Berwick Rangers. We'll say hello to him in a second, but first, Michael, why did we want to get Nathan on to chat about what's happening off the pitch right now at the club?
Yeah, look, I think it's been... you can see that the club's gone through some difficulty in the last couple of years, obviously relegated to Lowland League, and... reading that there's been a little bit of financial instability at the club, and look, there's been changes to the board and the setup at the club over the last few months, and looking in from the outside, they appear to be making some impressive steps, and we wanted to find out some more about what they've been doing.
Definitely, yeah. Nathan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Look forward to it.
No problem at all. Yeah, looking forward to it too. Introduce us to yourself, take us through your role at the club and some of the changes that have taken place recently, as Michael alluded to there, behind the scenes.
Sure. So I joined a little over 2 months ago now, so it's still quite new and quite fresh. As you mentioned, official title for now is Associate Director. I guess that's some kind of a probation period, right? We're going to go for a few months, see if this works for me, if it works for the club, and hopefully... In the coming weeks or months, I've become a fully fledged director with the rest of my peers. It's not a great deal of difference in terms of practicality, but from a corporate governance perspective, I don't really have the true legal responsibility for the shareholder at the minute. But yeah, hopefully that will change in time.
And what about yourself? How did you come to join the club? What has been your journey so far?
So I live probably about 400 yards from Sheffield Park, so that's part of it. I'm from Berwick originally. I moved away for a bit for university and work, and then we moved back to Berwick 4 years ago now. And I was always looking to do something in an extra kind of curricular, I guess, to my day job, which is in financial services. I was always looking for opportunities. Big football fan. Hadn't really kind of engaged with Berwick for a fair few years. It was in a bit of a strange place, but. Just I was looking to kind of get involved in more things. They put an advert out saying they were looking for some directors. My background in my day job is technology, financial services, kind of transformation, and helping kind of take. I work for Aegon on digital transformation, so I thought there's something I could offer the club in terms of trying to modernize it. So got in touch, put an application in, and here we are.
Superb. And then one of those aspects of the modernisation is something that Michael and I have both spotted in terms of new decade, new goals, new Berwick Rangers. And that seems to be the messaging that you're going out with at the moment. And you're working on some key principles as well, aren't you, around that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the tagline really allows us to drive forward. New decade speaks for itself. It's we're in 2020. It's a great point for us to reset again with relegation happening and dropping out of the league. New goals, I think for me, that's two things. It covers both as an organisation. We do have some new goals. We want to be more community-led. But also, hopefully, we'll see some more goals on the pitch once football's back. And new Berwick Rangers, I think the town has fallen out of love a little bit with the club. So we really want to revitalise what Berwick Rangers is and re-establish what it is in the community. And in terms of kind of the principles to support that, we want to be charitable, community-led. Be friendly and welcoming, open to new and all ideas, delivering social impact, be caring, supportive, encouraging, inspiring for, you know, children, people of all ages who want to get involved in sport. And fundamentally, that's underpinned by just do what we think is the right thing. So yeah, trying to move the club forward based on those principles. And I guess some of the things I'll get involved in or have been involved in are the web, social, digital marketing, building out digital propositions, whether that's streaming, digital retail channels. We're going to launch a new shop soon. Look at how to put card terminals in. So really just trying to make it a more modern club that people find it easy to engage with and want to engage with.
Obviously part of that, as you said, there has been a revised focus on the local community. What have been some of the initial steps the club has taken in this area?
As I mentioned, it's still early days. So I think the new board kind of got appointed as a core in January, and then myself and a few others joined as associates kind of February, March time. So it's still early days, but one of the kind of key pillars of that community is we're looking to build a foundation. So we're working with someone who's done this before for us and has success with other clubs and other areas. So we're really excited about building a foundation to be our kind of charitable arm and really get that driving value back in the community. Kind of where we are right now is just working through the objectives of that, getting the right trustees on board. I guess there's some kind of things around that have happened as well. You know, we've re-engaged with the junior teams in the town. We've kind of got contact with all of the other kind of maybe more senior teams. You know, that once people get past 18, they start playing senior football in our town, trying to figure out how we can do that. And also, I guess, with lockdown and the whole current situation, we're just trying to stand by our partners and help them and promote them and do the best we can in that way. So it's just a start, but hopefully the foundation will give us a real ability to grow that kind of focus on the community.
How's the feedback been off the local clubs so far?
I think it's good. So we've kind of got some common themes of feedback since I've been around. Thankfully positive, which is the town is thinking it's or seeing it as a really good thing that the club and its various entities, you know, whether that be a supporters trust or a supporters club or the Berwick Juniors team, for the first time in a while, the fans are really pleased that all those entities seem to be working together and have a same vision. You know, we mentioned the tagline. I think everyone's starting to buy into we can be a new club and we can take this forward. So that's one. The other is communication. One of the kind of principles really is about transparency as well. We want to be open and honest, and when things aren't going well, we'll tell people, and when it's going great, we'll share that success. But ultimately, being transparent and providing regular communication is really important. We really want to make it just feel like the club's important again, and that's the third bit of feedback we're seeing is actually they think the club is starting to have a life and a purpose, and they value it again. So we really want to turn it into to kind of harness that and turn it into a real community asset.
How have you been communicating with the fans around this as well? Obviously, there is some existing there's existing fans in place at the club already that are kind of hardcore and have been supporting the club through all these times already. How have they taken things on board, and how have you been speaking to them around all the changes?
So again, it's back to the transparency point. So we really try to be open and honest with the new fans and old fans. In terms of how that's delivered, I say lucky, but I don't think it is luck. I think it's down to the hard work of a lot of people in the past. We've got over 20,000 followers across our various social platforms. You know, for a town of Berwick size, that's quite phenomenal. So you know, I think the average population is less than 20,000. So to have that many people engaging with the club, that is our outlet. You know, we've got a website and stuff for the real, the official articles and stuff. But we're going to push that out through various social channels, and that kind of gets two-way interaction going, doesn't it? You post out if this will happen, and again, because people were trying to be transparent and build a bit of a open to all ideas culture, we take feedback directly from fans on social. I guess there was one thing that happened before I joined, which I can't talk about too much going here, but there was when the new board joined, they did an open evening, kind of town hall sort of thing, where everyone came and had their views. So that was the starting point, and since then we've just maintained regular updates through social, whether that's video or written posts. That's the principles.
Yeah, I was just about to ask if you had done anything kind of face to face with fans. Obviously, in this kind of coronavirus era, it's very difficult. But yeah, obviously before that thing, before everything kind of fell into place as it is now, I was just going to ask if you'd done anything face to face.
Yeah, there was a big town hall where we outlined. I wasn't part of that at that point, but where the club outlined its strategy, which I think is really strong, and people got behind. We got some good challenges and helped kind of reshape some of the thinking, which was really helpful. And yeah, we've kind of carried on with that. We have been discussing whether we do kind of a end of season wrap up, and obviously that would historically have been a town hall type approach, but maybe over Zoom or something. So yeah, we've been discussing how we can kind of wrap the season up and say, this is what we've done, this is what you told us, this is how it's happened, and here's what we'll do next. So still thinking through how and when that happens, but we'd like to.
Nathan, what were the sort of common pain points and bits of feedback that fans were specifically saying? Because I'm sure there's a lot of clubs out there that will emphasise with that and resonate.
It's kind of the inverse of what I just said. So I think, so when you ask that, are you meaning from currently or before the change?
Before the change. So when you had your open sort of meetings and stuff, what were the sort of common points, common things that were said by fans?
So the lack of transparency, I believe, is one. So they really wanted just to know what was going on and have a voice. I think for a period of time, there wasn't that great relationship with the fans, and it wasn't necessarily all advice taken on board. And the other one, which I found interesting, and I think it's quite unique to Berwick, is the England-Scotland thing. So, you know, if we, you know, one campaign leads to looking at Berwick and the town and how we can grow the appeal of the club there, that's seen as quite tribalistic to some people. You know, well, you play in Scotland, why are you not thinking about being the club for the borders? And how do we grow our reach to kind of be both Berwick, Northeast England, and the Scottish borders? So we've got kind of two or three different regions, I guess, who all want to engage, and we need to figure out. The feedback we got was we need to figure out how we maximize that and how we make sure we don't leave parts of that equation out, and we get everybody going the same way.
Another thing that you did before lockdown was you had a successful community day. Can you take us through what that day involved and how you went about and how the club went about putting something like that together?
Yeah, sure. So ultimately the goal was to make it a really feel-good day. The idea being that if people come and they enjoy it, they'll come back. I guess the weather wasn't really on our side. It was one of the coldest days of the year, but despite that, we still had a really excellent day. The other thing that was really key to that was accessibility. So we got the gate and or the ticket kind of price underwritten by two sponsored organizations, and that made it kind of free entry, or entry by donation, sorry, for fans. Which, funny actually, that seen us take more in donations than we usually would in the gate receipts. That was an interesting model, but that's kind of a big thanks to the community for that one. We got in touch with local schools. We wanted to put some stuff on the pitch before the actual game. You know, have the local teams and local kids on the Sheffield Park get a taste for it and enjoy that experience. You know, that's something that a lot of kids in our league not necessarily have the opportunity to do. You know, we've got quite good facilities. We've got a nice stadium. We've got a really good grass that people can play on. So that was good. We then kind of thought about media and how do we grow the coverage of this. So we had the BBC team come from A View from the Terrace. They brought a bit of excitement. And to touch on the success specifically, I guess, I think we set a Lowland League record for attendance that day, which is 506. So our average is about 340, 350. So getting 506 was excellent. And we put a stake in the ground that that's our target next year. So we want 500 people is what we think we can achieve if we really have a compelling fan experience and make it a great place to come watch football.
Was any lessons from the day that you'll go, oh, I definitely want to do that again, or we'll probably not do that again?
Yeah, I think this is something we should do way more regularly. Clearly, it would be nice if you could let people in for donation every time, but I don't think that's sustainable. But absolutely, there's something there around price point, making sure that it is accessible and that people are feeling they get value for money from the club, whether that be... Football's not just about the 90 minutes. I think it's more about the fan experience, you know, meeting your friends beforehand, catching up with people you haven't seen for the week, you know, people stay behind to have a drink at the bar. I think it's how do you... That day was an event, it wasn't a football match, so I think we need to do that. How do we make a great day out for people, which is accessible and enjoyable?
You mentioned that a couple of sponsors got on board with that day. You've recently launched a new commercial brochure. I was speaking about it on a previous podcast. How did you bring that all together?
I guess it's like any business. We've got, and for me, that's kind of what I've been bringing to the club. So whilst I'm a football fan, I've never ran a football club. But what I think I can bring to this is a commercial kind of thinking. So to me, the club is a business as much as it is a community asset and a football club. And like any business, we have commercial levers so we can pull. So we're very lucky as well that with the new board and then the associate directors who joined a month or two after, we've got a truly global reach when it comes to network and business partners. So we had to think about it. We're going to have to leverage that. You know, this is an asset. It's quite unique. People are fascinated by the fact that we are the only English club playing the Scottish Pyramid. So we've got to look at our USP and think, how do we sell that and push that message to our various distribution channels, whether that's local, national, or global. But in terms of the practicalities of how it came together, I'm really kind of lucky and grateful to work with a really strong and professional media team. The guys are all volunteers, but they love the club. And with that team we have, we've got all types of content covered. You know, we've got people who can do various parts of a marketing strategy, essentially. So we've got Martin Ingalls, for example. He's got a journalism background and an excellent writer, so he does all of our content stuff. We've got a podcast, which is hosted and produced by Adam Hunter. Alan Skelly runs BRFC TV. And specifically for the brochure, Dale Jones, who is a communications professional, Dale himself took the lead on creating it, the design, the putting together. And he produced, what I think, a really excellent output that we can all be proud of. So yeah, big thanks to Dale for that.
Within the brochure, because it happens no matter what level you are, how did you go about valuing your assets? Because it can be quite difficult to do.
Yeah, I guess you could put a finger in the air, but that, I think that's a risky strategy for any business. For me, it comes down to impact and outcomes. We've got a really strong brand, which in itself is a huge asset, so that brings inherent value. Beyond that, we've got the experiences I mentioned, we've got players, partnerships, and all of those things you need to mold into a value proposition, and that can be offered to various parties. When it comes to valuing those specifically, whether that's to sell a package or to kind of sell a partnership opportunity to somebody, we've got to look at where we make a tangible difference for that sponsor or partner. You know, can we help? How can we help them? You know, we're trying to get away from what can people do for Berwick, but what can Berwick do for you as a community, as a sponsor, as a partner, whatever it may be. So we've really looked at how can we help people sell more of their product? How can we help sell their brand? How can we grow their brand? Are there different variations of essentially a partnership or a business model you can look at? You know, so it's not always you give us X amount of money and you get 5 tickets and a board up. I think we need to be, and we have been a bit more creative in terms of what we can offer. I mentioned we've got over 20,000 fans. That's a huge audience, which a lot of small businesses in the town are very grateful to be able to access. So we look at how we can leverage not just a one-for-one, but how we can offer a value proposition in return for a partnership or sponsorship.
Yeah, and I guess the shirt sponsorship raffle is something that is part of that commercial brochure, and it's something the club has done before and you are doing it again. How successful is it for the club, and did you set a target for how many people or businesses that you wanted to enter it?
So we did it the season before last, I believe, and at that point we were really lucky. I think it's really good that we had a fan win it and they donated it to charity, which is a great gesture. So we had a local charity on the front of the shirt for a year, which was excellent. In terms of a target, absolutely. We need to ensure that we raise at least the same amount of money that we would normally look to raise for a shirt sponsor in a single kind of deal through the raffle. That's crucial. So we absolutely have that target. And in terms of success, so we launched that probably a little under 2 weeks ago now, and we're 75% of the way to the target already. You know, the raffle's still got a couple of months left to run. So to be at 75% already is tremendous. So we are quite confident we will get the target, and hopefully if things go well, we'll go past that.
How do you, obviously there'll be companies that just donate to every year, but do you guys go out and reach out to local businesses, or do you just rely on them to come to you?
It's very two-way. So I think there's probably three strategies. So actually, the one we didn't do much of is necessarily people who did it before per se. We didn't rely on those people to come back and just assume they give us a ticket entry. I think that's unlikely to just assume people to do that. So that's been kind of supplemented or complemented by just re-engaging. As I say, we want to build relationships and partnerships for the long term. This is not a get money in quick thing. This is about how do we actually help our community. You know, if a local business wins this, you know, for a modest fee of £200 plus VAT, they can get a really excellent package, which is worth thousands of pounds usually. So we've just been trying to engage and sell that message. And again, it's about value proposition.
Yeah, well, my follow-up was going to be around, obviously, that it's not just the winner of that raffle that gets that kind of benefit of being on the front of the kit. All participants get something as part of it, isn't it? And even that is a big thing for some of the local businesses, like you said.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's kind of a part of the answer to the previous question as well. So one of the things we've seen is we've been promoting and thanking everybody very publicly for donating at this time some money which might be difficult for them to find. So we're very grateful that people are participating. And we're just sharing that message, saying, oh, these 10 people, these 10 companies have joined the raffle this week. And what we've seen is that's kind of three things. One, it's really good for audience. Again, those businesses are being seen by lots of people. Two, it is a genuine thank you. We really want to make sure we are giving back and people are helping us. We want to help you. And three, we've had people go, oh, they've joined. Maybe I should enter. This is a really good opportunity. So it becomes a bit of a, not self-fulfilling prophecy, but you know, a bit of a snowball effect that people see other companies joining in and think, oh yeah, there's something in there for us. So that's definitely part of it.
And you've got the new kit deal as well that has just been recently announced, and the partnership with that. How pleased are the club how that's come together?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're really excited to be working with Broader Embroideries, who are based out in Greenlaw. And for me, I think it's really cool that we're working with Kappa, and they're pretty big in this game. So we've already launched our home kit. I think it's really good. I think it's got a bit of a retro feel, so I'm hoping that'll be a big favourite for the fans once it's available to buy. The away kit is to be announced. We're doing something a bit different with that, and I'm really excited to share that in the coming weeks. But yeah, for me, it's just really cool that we're working with Kappa. You know, they've given us a custom design. It's not a stock shirt, and we're working, you know, in that capacity. We're on a level playing field with the likes of Napoli, Monaco, Real Betis, Aston Villa. So yeah, for Berwick Rangers, that's pretty cool.
And what about the 1881 fund as well? Can you tell us a bit more about that and how that's been working?
Yeah, absolutely. That's blown me away, really. We've raised, I think it's over £15,000 now. And the generosity of the supporters and the fan base, it's just incredible. You know, we originally set our target as 10,000, and that was surpassed. I guess also thanks to the Berwick Supporters Trust, who put in a chunky donation. But as a whole, it's been really, really good. In terms of how it's actually working and how we've been, again, trying to offer value, it's not just an empty, please give us some money. We're trying to build an experience. So we've done some really, I would say, cool or innovative stuff. So we kind of ran a virtual game when football was cancelled. So how can we give that experience of coming to a match to fans, even though there wasn't any football? And thanks to Sky Sports, we got some footage of the historic games we played when we hosted Rangers and stuff. So we had watch-long parties where people could buy a ticket through Donated Ticket, who I think are doing some excellent stuff for Scottish football as a whole at the minute. And we put a digital program, and it was kind of a really good day. People bought a virtual ticket, they had the program, they watched the game, they were chatting on social about it. Yeah, it was good. So that was, as well as generosity and kindness, we're trying to offer different experiences or different opportunities to get involved and donate a small fee for that. So that all of these things added up. But yeah, again, the underlying principle there is we've just got very generous and supportive fans who have donated an awful lot of money, which will be invested directly into the Playing Squad for next year.
How much is the current sort of COVID crisis impacted the club, Nathan? Obviously, when it comes to the financial side, you've mentioned the fans doing well, but you would have, in this time, should have had games, etc. And how partners have reacted to this as well?
Yeah, so it's a bit odd, isn't it? The whole thing's a bit strange. We're all winging our way through it in some way. But for Berwick Rangers, it's I think we've done okay. I think we've balanced it quite well, if I'm honest. I think we've been very smart and been very aware of the kind of developing situation. Our partners absolutely have been impacted, and again, we're looking at other ways that we can help them with that. But one thing that's really good is the long-term relationships are still in place, so we haven't really lost any relationships. You know, people are still committing to, and everyone's got a confidence that we'll bounce back at some point. So that's still been going along. Obviously, we've looked at ways of delaying things or maybe restructuring things to buy everyone a bit more time. So that's worked well. And in terms of the games you mentioned, we only had one home game left this season, sorry. So when it comes to that, yeah, we lost a good day. It was going to be Spartans. I think that would have been probably up there with our community day for attendance. That would have been a really successful day. But the other four or five games we had, I think it was four, maybe five, were away games. So actually, that would have been at club expense. So, you know, we saved on travel and stuff like that for those days. So all in all, I think it's been an opportunity for us to take stock of where we are. And my kind of summary of it would be, I think we've shown great resilience. And that has been achieved by just doing what, believe, you know, the principle I said at the start is doing the right thing. and we've, I think the club stood up pretty well to that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely been one of the shining lights through all this, hasn't it, in terms of Scottish football as a whole, but some, a lot of the clubs individually as well. Nathan, can you take us through some of the kind of innovations that have taken place over the last couple of months or so? We've got Twitch partnerships, we've got esports teams. The club have been trying some things that you might not expect a Lowland League club to try. Can you take us through some of them and the thinking behind them?
Yeah, sure. I think the question is interesting that you might not expect from a Lowland League side. I've never been a big fan of labels. I think anyone can do anything you want to do within certain parameters, obviously. But I think if you want to be good at something, push the boundaries, give it a go. And as I mentioned, we've got a really professional and strong kind of media team, I guess you could call it. So yeah, leveraging that, we were keen to try new things. So if we take Twitch first as a platform, it's just being used as a part of our wider exploration as how we can use video more engagingly. Clearly, video is a vastly growing area. You know, the way we consume video content is ever changing. So Twitch was a first step into that. We also recognize it's a platform that can be monetized fairly easily. So it's part of the bigger picture on how can we leverage other platforms, whether they're social, gaming, or whatever it may be. How can we leverage them to create additional revenue streams? The esports team, the FIFA team, has just given us a platform to really test out Twitch and understand how it works. So they joined DC93, who is a football manager player, as two sets of representatives in the esports or e-games world that are helping us reach new audiences and new fans. We had a good example this week, actually. We had a guy from Brazil get in touch on Twitter saying he's got a newfound love for Berwick Rangers. He's a football manager fan. He's seen what this club were doing there, and now he's buying a club shirt or whatever it may be. So that's a little bit of revenue that we wouldn't have got for something, you know, and hopefully we can grow that audience globally. And in terms of, I guess the other thing to add to this, the partnerships are mutually beneficial. Again, we've got a really good audience, so our engagement with these esports teams help boost their audience, whether that be fundraising for themselves or fundraising money for the club. Leveraging both sides of that equation for both parties helps us grow our reach and extend our reach, and it's kind of mutually beneficial. The last thing I'd say on that is actually we place a big emphasis on cultural fit. This isn't just about going after having a representation or a representative, sorry, in every single different arena almost. It's really about shared values. So we want to make sure that, you know, in the examples we talked about there through the FIFA team and the football manager team, we share some common ground and we all want to do the right thing for the club. So yeah, it's interesting. It's early days, but I think it's so far showed to be quite promising, and hopefully we can grow that.
Yeah, I think it's great to see that you're thinking about that additional revenue side of things as well, because I think, and maybe in the past, clubs have just picked up on it because other clubs are getting involved as well. But actually thinking about it strategically, I've written about it kind of esports quite a few times now over the past few years, and it can be an additional, a really positive additional revenue stream for clubs at all levels.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm fairly new to being heavily involved in a football club at this level, but from the outside looking in, I kind of observed that it was often a lot of one-time kind of revenue drivers. So clubs would sell sponsorship for this, that, or they would do an event and get money in, and that's great for that season. But my goal with Berwick is to create a sustainable business which has multiple revenue streams, has a diversified portfolio, and we can actually kind of don't have to rely on one-offs, whatever that may, whether that's a grant or a donation, whatever it is. They're absolutely vital and important, but also how can we have a fundamentally solid foundation of regular revenue? So yeah, these are all ways to start to look at that.
Yeah, and something else a little bit different recently, you announced Derek Ray as a club ambassador. How did that come about? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the first thing to say there is Derek's a great guy. That's the crux of how it came about. He's just supportive, engaging, helpful, and he's great for us to on the side. In terms of how it came about, it's kind of twofold, I guess. So an old boss and friend of mine, Colin Quinn, who runs Be Positive Analysis out in Greenock, he knows Derek and was a friend of Derek, so he kind of put us in touch. But it happened to be at exactly the same time that Derek had put out on Twitter that given the current economic climate, he was wanting to use his audience and his reach to help support smaller clubs. So as soon as we seen that, and at the same time we had a connection, it was like, oh, this is going to work, I think. So we got in touch through that, and here we are. I guess the thing that I took really a lot of pride in, actually, is when that conversation started. We weren't new to him. He knew about us. He'd been following what we'd done. He has a good friend who lives in Boston with him, who's actually from Eyemouth, just up the road from Berwick, and they've been keeping an eye on what Berwick's been doing and seen the new work of the new board. So that was really cool to know that our reach had got out to Boston, and he'd already seen what we were doing. So when we got in touch, it was a no-brainer. From I guess if you look at his quote, it looks like he gave us for our announcement, it looks like a no-brainer. He was really excited to be involved. So I think it's credit to the work of the team over the last few months that our reach is growing and people are taking interest.
Yeah, definitely. And even just like spotting that opportunity as well and going after it is something that World Club should do, obviously. Like he offered that up and you took it on board.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something I've learned over the last few months is people are really quite helpful. Like generally, as a club, we've got lots of help and lots of positive goodwill. Just by asking. So yeah, I think people want to help other people, which is refreshing.
Are there any future plans that you can share with us at this stage? Maybe a sneak peek or an exclusive?
Yeah, so you guys had the My Kujo podcast a few weeks ago. That's something we've been looking at for a while. Again, we've done some analysis on our fan base over the last couple of weeks, and it really does surprise me how global our little club is. I say little, and I don't mean that as a derogatory term. But, you know, we're a small town in the north of England, but our reach, you know, we've got I help manage the online shop at the minute, and we've got so many orders that go to the US or Germany or Egypt was one. Like it really blows my mind. So we want to think about how do we leverage that? How do we get those fans involved in that Saturday afternoon? So streaming is maybe one to look at. So that's been explored. One that's not really an exclusive for going forward, but it's our own podcast, chance to plug it, I guess. We launched that, what, 3 or 4 weeks ago now, and I'm really proud of that. I think it's an excellent piece of work from Adam. The feedback on it is great. The listening views are going up and up every week. Derek Ray will be on that in a few weeks. I'm really looking forward to hearing what he's got to say on that as well. So that's been good. I touched on it earlier. We've got our online shop, so we're trying to improve our online experience. So I'm a big fan of digital journeys. Should be seamless, easy to use. Customer focused, so we've done some work on that, and we'll be launching that in a few weeks. And with that comes what I think is really exciting is our Awake It. I'm really hoping people are going to love that, and we'll hopefully do something quite cool to launch that.
Nathan, can I just ask, in terms of the shop, and I know that there's clubs out there that have got various different setups, shop wise, online and in person. What are you using to run that shop online?
So it's about to change. So we're going to be working with Border Embroideries as part of our. Well, we've announced them as our kit partner. They're going to help manage our online retail proposition. So I've been working with them to build that out. I think what we've got a number of volunteers who over the last years or so have been working really hard to manage the stock. But again, if I go back to my very first comment on, I think I can bring to the table at Berwick a bit of digital transformation and think about how we can do something differently. One of the challenges we have is stock management. So if we've got an online shop which is being managed by any number of tools on the internet you can purchase, trying to sync that to what's in the actual shop in Sheffield Park was difficult. So we've had to look at a different way to do that through and we're working with Border Embroideries on doing that.
That's pretty interesting. And yeah, no, I think just to echo what you said on the podcast, we talked about this on the lower non-league podcast with the likes of David from Clyde Bank and Roy at Cumbernauld Colts. It's great to see clubs going into that different space for content, the longer form content, because there is obviously an audience for it, and the quality of the content is exceptional at that level. So that's not really a question. It's more just a comment from my point of view, and saying it's been great to see that sort of thing. Obviously, you've been in and around it now a couple of months. Some of the other directors since the start of the year. What would you have any advice for clubs based on what you and some of the other directors maybe have learned in your short time so far?
I guess. So one from me on a personal level, I think it's been really, really refreshing. So I'm 28. The others in the media team are all in their 20s too. And the directors as a whole have kind of let us get on with it. They've said, you guys are good at this. This is what you can offer us to go do it well. You know, there's not been an overbearing kind of control, which I think had there been that, I think that would massively stifle the ability and agility of the club. So we've been able to react to things and drive a real social engagement based on events happening, and given that freedom and responsibility and accountability, for, I guess in my case, to the board to deliver that, it is really good. So I think it's about having clear accountabilities and trusting people to do their best. You know, hire good people in terms of various skill sets and let them do what they're good at. You know, we're quite lucky across the board that we're now, I think, probably the most diverse the Berwick Rangers board's ever been. We've got people who are experts in property management, you know, and bringing a digital lens. We've got HR professionals. I'm not going to get involved in the HR stuff, right? That we have experts for that. So I think it's really about have clear vision on who's doing what and get good people to do it and let them do it well. So that's something I think we strive for. And then the other one, which I think is really helpful or has been in a number of discussions we've had as a group recently, is be data-driven. This is something I bring from my day job. Listen to your customers, listen to the data, look at the trends across all industries, not just football. CEOs or industry leaders or experts tell you, this is how it should happen. Like, you ever asked a customer, like, ran a test to see if it works? And actually what you find is often the gut feel of a very experienced senior person who's been around for years, it may not actually be what the majority of customers are asking for. So we've been very data-led and running little experiments to see what appetite is and letting that drive the direction rather than saying this is what we think is right all the time. There's absolutely a part of that. We do have experience that you can leverage, but it's very good to test and learn as you go and make sure that you are delivering stuff that people think is of value.
Big fan of that, definitely. I think that's something that obviously from not working in football on a day-to-day basis for me is something that is really important, and I think I'd love to see more clubs take that approach too. Nathan, just to finish us up, Michael asked you about advice, but I wanted to ask you kind of where you take inspiration from for any of the things that you're doing at the club in terms of, like you maybe said, other football clubs, but not even sport in general as well.
Oh, that's a good one. So if I'm completely honest, it might be a bit of a sad answer. I think it's the banking revolution. I look at people like Monzo, Starling, Revolut. They have turned on its head completely what is a very traditional and well-understood industry of banking. And I think to some extent, Scottish football clubs could be described as like an old archaic bank. You know, it's been the same thing for years. You turn up on Saturday, you watch football. It's and really what, if you look at any of the, again, go back to the neobanks or the new banks, they're putting the customer at the heart of everything, and that then drives your content strategy and your engagement strategy, and then opens up revenue, different revenue channels. And that's kind of, I think that would come across as what we've been doing. So we've been putting our customer first. So what is it the fans want? How can we make them have a great day? How can we make them have a great experience? And how can we then give them content to engage with that helps with that? From there, you build up trust and relationships, and that all in turn hopefully will get people back to the club, get a feel good factor in the stadium, and that should translate to the players.
No, you're spot on. To be fair, have a bit of experience with kind of that thing, the tech side of things, and definitely I completely agree with it. More clubs could take some inspiration from that kind of thing. Michael, anything else we wanted to ask Nathan?
No, Nathan, I just want to say thank you for giving up some of your time on what we're recording on a bank holiday. So I appreciate you coming on. I think there's that fascinating chat as always, but really I think there's so much there that clubs across the country, no matter what division they're in, will resonate with. And there'll be clubs that have been in a similar situation in terms of instability and can maybe look at Berwick Rangers as a beacon of hope, because we've talked about the club on this podcast a couple of times. You're seeing what's happening, and it really is, as I said at the start, there seems to be some impressive steps being made, and just wishes all the luck going forward.
Thanks very much. Yeah, I'm really proud of what we've done in a really short space of time, and I'm hoping that bodes well for the foreseeable future. So yeah, thanks for having us share our story.
No problem at all. And Michael, have you got a couple of examples to finish us off? I've got a few.
Yeah, it's not actually examples I've done this week. We recorded the last podcast with Josh from Indy 11, and we started talking after we were recording, and he's a big advocate of learning, continual learning, and he recommended some books to us. So I thought, you know what, when we were talking, I thought, God, this would have been great to have on the podcast. So I thought I would just share what he recommended. I've not read them yet. I've ordered a couple, but he recommended Thanocracy by David Muirman Scott. He also recommended Power of Moments by Heath Brose and Building a Story Brand by Donald Miller. And one of the ones that I'll throw in the mix that I've got that I've read before is it's a book called The Jelly Effect, and it's a guide to effective communication. So look, four books, don't expect everybody to go out and buy them, but I just thought it would be something slightly different in terms of things that we've seen or recommendations, and I'm looking forward to reading a couple of them.
Oh, definitely. I'm a big fan of reading as well, so I was going to go out and buy a couple of those books that you suggested to us as well, yeah. I've got a couple, just a few things that I've spotted. So one of those was a guy caught on Twitter called Paul Mladjinovic. I think he's done some work with Hibs in the past, I believe. So he created an animation for it being 1 year since Trent Alexander-Arnold took that quick corner against Barcelona for Divock Origi to score. I think he said it took him 50 hours of drawing to put the animation together, but it went pretty viral on Twitter. So I think it was hopefully all worth it in the end for him. Unbelievable effort. And I think he's Paul Mlad _design on Twitter if you want to check that out. And then my last one, I'm not sure if you've plugged this before, Michael, but it's Good Marketing HQ on Twitter. It's just a really handy looking Twitter account that gives like quick and simple tips, best practice for loads of things around marketing, such as copywriting or UX. And they've got a good website attached to it as well. So well worth a look and a follow on Twitter. Nathan, again, thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me. Enjoyed that.
No problem. And we'll see you again next time.